from the National Catholic Register. This is Register Radio, bringing light and clarity to the news and topics that affect your life.
Today on Register Radio, Elena Rodriguez talks with founder and president of the Faith and Reason Institute, Dr. Robert Royal, about why these so-called new rights of the child being pushed by the UN are dead wrong. Also, Dan Burke is here. He will talk with Ann Carey about the continuing issues and controversies surrounding the Leadership Conference of Women Religious, the LCWR. Welcome again to Register Radio. It's a co-production of EWTN and the National Catholic Register. I'm Tom Price, along with our producer Elena Rodriguez and Dan Burke, Executive Director of the Register. Thanks again for joining us. Our first guest, Dr. Robert Royal, is the founder and president of the Faith and Reason Institute in Washington, D.C. He's also editor-in-chief of The Catholic Thing, a great website at thecatholicthing.org. He is the author of many books, including 1492 and All That, Political Manipulations of History, also Reinventing the American People, Unity and Diversity Today, and The Catholic Martyrs of the 20th Century, A Comprehensive Global History. Dr. Royal holds a B.A. and an M.A. from Brown University and a Ph.D. in Comparative Literature from the Catholic University of America. His articles have appeared in numerous scholarly journals and other publications, including First Things, The Wall Street Journal, Washington Post, National Review, and The American Spectator. He writes and speaks frequently on questions of ethics, culture, religion, and politics. And today, we're going to talk about the UN and some so-called new rights of the child that they are actively promoting. Robert, welcome to Register Radio.
Good to be with you.
Robert, this is Elena. And just to provide a little bit of background for our listeners, a United Nations committee in early February told the Catholic Church to get over its opposition to teenagers having sex, and that the Catholic Church needs to change its teachings on abortion and homosexuality. The United Nations asked this committee to oversee implementing the Convention on the Rights of the Child, a hard law treaty the Church ratified back in 1990, and every country in the world has ratified that Convention on the Rights of the Child, except for the United States and Somalia. But in early February, this committee from the United Nations came out to criticize the Church. Now, the United Nations is labeling these so-called rights of the child as a legally binding international instrument. What was the first red flag that went up for you?
Well, if you look at the original Convention on the Rights of the Child, as we know, in this cultural moment, to talk about the rights of children is not simply a matter of protecting them from abuse, you know, sexual or physical violence, hunger, those sorts of things. These things almost inevitably, because of the way that the culture is globally right now, get attracted into much wilder realms. I mean, we've got very recently Belgium actually talking about the right to assisted suicide for children and implementing that. So the very title of this and the fact that the United States resisted, I think it shows you something. We're one of the few nations in the world that actually thinks if you sign a treaty, you actually have to follow it. Most of the nations, as you say, you have places like Saudi Arabia on this particular committee. And we want to be clear that this is a committee that has no mandate to impose on the Church or anybody else its views, but it's a committee charged with enforcing or interpreting or discussing a convention. It's not the entire UN that's rebuking the Church here. So there's an agenda, and these agendas tend to come out in these areas where no one is in control and people who kind of get the ability to speak are able to say quite outrageous things, even to the Catholic Church.
Yes, well, that was exactly my next question. What jurisdiction does the United Nations have to tell the Church what to do or not to do? And could the Church fight back, so to speak, or is it even worth it if it's not the entire United Nations? What to do?
All right. I mean, we have to start with the big picture here. The United Nations is 200-plus member nations. The Holy See is an observer member state because Vatican City is still technically a political entity as well. But of those 200 countries, three-quarters of them, probably more, I mean, at least that many by my estimation, are totalitarian or they're run by thugs. That's why the General Assembly is never consulted about anything serious. You have the Security Council, and there are a few other agencies like the World Health Organization that have some kind of credibility in international terms. The pernicious thing here is that these conventions, et cetera, that look like they're aiming at the good, and who can be against children being protected or having certain rights, mm-hmm. as I said earlier, they get attracted into this strange ideological culture that we have now. So a committee steps out and feels like there is no outrage in telling a church to change its teaching on abortion or homosexuality, telling the Vatican City-State itself that it ought to ban spanking. And, you know, this is way beyond what the actual text of the convention says. And actually, the text talks about protecting children before they are born as well as after they are born. So there's an implicit, you could argue, there's an implicit pro-life message in the actual black-letter text.
That's very important.
Right. But the United States was quite right, I think, not to sign this. When we sign a treaty, we respect it. We think it is binding. We are right not to give the UN the opportunity to use this to make mischief.
And it's very good. You're listening to Register Radio. We're talking here with Dr. Robert Royal. So this committee of the United Nations, rather, is criticizing the Vatican City State as a state per se, not the Vicar of Christ as the worldwide head of the universal Catholic faith, right?
Well, see, that's one of the ambiguous things about the Church, because the Church is, more than anything else, it's the mystical body of Christ. Mm-hmm. It's this religious communio. It's not a state in the modern understanding of a nation state. But the Vatican City State participates as a observer in the UN. It's not a formal member, but it attends all the major meetings of the UN. It has a right to speak at them. Obviously, in recent years, the UN has invited popes like John Paul II and Benedict and Paul VI to come and speak. Mm-hmm. And they've made important statements. And the Church does help. I mean, it's helped to stop cloning on an international level, for example, and some other nasty things that are coming down the line. But there's, you know, you're dining with the devil here. This is not an institution that, at its beginning, it was a little bit better. It's grown worse over time.
And has the United Nations or any of its committees ever told other heads of world religions what to do or what not to do or how to think?
Well, I can't speak encyclopedically. Perhaps there's some odd committee or some secretary somewhere who's spoken to, say, Muslims about some of their views on women or whatever. But, you know, it's like here in the United States, there's a kind of a politically correct etiquette that governs these things. So, you know, you'll have the Secretary General of the United Nations who will tell some country to be cautious about its, you know, I don't know, capital punishment or whatever, but it's very cautious about intruding. And actually, the original charter of the United Nations was there to protect cultural and religious and national differences. That's actually in the text of those founding documents. However, as I keep saying, what's happened is that those earlier rights that were kind of understood by everyone, property rights, freedom of the press, freedom of religion, those have now morphed, as they have here in the United States, into assuming that these international bodies have a right to impose gay marriage, non-discrimination against gays, abortion. As I'm sure you know, Elena, in Latin America, there's been a lot of pressure by both the UN and by the EU to get these predominantly Catholic countries to accept abortion rights. It's unfortunate that the UN, I think, could have some marginal utility in the world, not, as I said, in the General Assembly, but it could have some marginal utility, and unfortunately, it's now become a vehicle for this cultural radicalism and social engineering.
So we have the Universal Declaration of Human Rights going back to 1948, which you mentioned, you talked about, and now these so-called new rights of the child that came out of this committee earlier in February. Why that change? I'm very curious. I mean, I'm very suspicious about this.
Yeah, you know, it's hard to determine why it is that there's been this shift in global culture, because certainly at the time that the UN was founded, if you had told people that it would become a vehicle for, say, gay rights, it would have been laughable, because most of the religious traditions of the world and the cultural traditions of the world don't envision such a thing. There's no culture known to the human race prior to the last couple of decades in which gay marriage, so-called gay marriage, has existed. It's always been understood that marriage is a pretty special thing, and you can see that even without the benefit of biblical revelation, just by looking at the nature of how the generations reproduce themselves. But there's some odd combination. You know, I know some traditional Catholics blame this on modern philosophy. And of course, there are currents in modern philosophy that take us in the direction of radical individualism, where the individual defines what's right and wrong and demands certain rights from the state and even from international bodies. But I really think there's something different, because that modern philosophy going, you know, that begins with Descartes and Bacon and Locke, and that's been around for centuries. We didn't get gay marriage and we didn't get abortion. Mm-hmm. Something else has happened, and I wake up almost every day trying to wrestle with this question. I don't know exactly what it is, but it has something, it has philosophical elements, but I think it just has some strange historical dimension that we can't entirely understand.
And I also have to ask you about the Belgium case. We know that Belgium approved the rights to euthanasia for children under 18 earlier this month on February 13th. So besides Belgium allowing euthanasia, other countries are permitting it, like the Netherlands and Luxembourg and Switzerland, and even the American states of Oregon and Washington, Montana and Vermont allow assisted suicide. But do you see the so-called right to euthanasia specifically for children extending across Europe and maybe possibly one day to the United States?
Well, I pray to God, no, but it's hard to know where the brakes are going to be applied in matters like this. Yeah. You know, for years I've been noticing that there's a strange recalibration of the relationship between parents and children going on. I first started to notice this when my wife would go to the local public library and they wouldn't show us which books the kids had taken out, even though we'd been there when they'd taken them out earlier. So, yeah, there was this assumption that children already had a right to privacy, and these are minor children, against their own parents. This is a very strange cultural shift, because as we know, in the old days, the town librarian was the one you thought was supposed to be prim and proper and kept people from getting pornography. And now the local town librarian is the one that is promoting children's radical autonomy from the oversight of their parents. So I don't know. The cultural momentum seems to be going in the direction that you've just described. I would hope that at least some level of sanity would prevail. You know, in a country like France, they've had a great debate going on recently about the redefinition of marriage by the socialist government that exists. And the French, by and large, being French, you know, are kind of laissez-faire about sexual matters. But somewhat to my surprise, the French have drawn a line in the sand about homosexual adoption. So there's still some sort of sanity there in an otherwise somewhat sexually loose culture, saying that, you know, we don't mess around with the kids. We may allow adults to do all sorts of things, but we don't mess around with the kids. And there are other signs in Europe pushing back against this sort of EU and UN cultural revolution. There's some signs that there's still some sanity there, but who can predict? I mean, in God's providence, maybe we'll prevail on this at least.
And there's a lot we can do through prayer. Thank you very much, Dr. Robert Royal, for being here on Register Radio with us. And you can read more of Dr. Robert Royal's commentary on ncregister.com. It's called "The New Rights at the United Nations Are Dead Wrong." That's Dr. Robert Royal's commentary on ncregister.com. Thank you very much for being with us today.
My pleasure, Elena.
When we return, we'll talk with Ann Carey about the promotion of heresy from a rather unlikely source. This is Register Radio on the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network. More in a moment.
Dr. Ray Guarendi talks about the National Catholic Register.
The Register is catechetical news. In other words, it teaches the news from the perspective of the Catechism. And you can learn all kinds of good things about the Church and faithful living through the Register. They cover a wide, wide range. Catechesis, explaining the faith, what's going on in the world, in the Vatican. Good, solid Catholic journalism. The Register helps people cut through the spin. There's no spin in the Register. It is faithful Catholic teaching, analyzing of the news from a Catholic perspective.
To start your subscription to the National Catholic Register today, go to EWTN.com and click on the banner for the Register or call 800-854-6316.
Let's return to Register Radio on EWTN.
And welcome back. Along with Elena Rodriguez and Dan Burke, I'm Tom Price. Our next guest, Ann Carey, has written extensively about Catholic women religious for many years now, publishing articles on the subject in the National Catholic Register, our Sunday Visitor, Crisis, and Catholic World Report. Ann has received Catholic Press Association awards for news and feature writing and for investigative reporting. Now, the second updated edition of her book, Sisters in Crisis, is now available from Ignatius Press. This book is a marvelous book and really a great resource for all of us. It discusses at length the ongoing controversy surrounding the Leadership Conference of Women Religious and that group's clashes with the Vatican. Today we're going to talk about the new cosmology of the LCWR. And welcome again to Register Radio.
Thanks for having me.
And it's great to have you with us. I want to echo what Tom said, and that is that your book is really extraordinary. It not only catalogs what's happened to women religious in the United States since the Council, but it also helped me personally to develop a much more deep sense of love and solidarity with those women religious who have not always been treated as well as they should have by us, by the Church. But in this case, today we're not talking about that. We're really talking about how women religious in the U.S. have lost their way, at least those very much represented by the LCWR. And I want to make a quick distinction between the Leadership Conference of Women Religious, those who lead all of the women religious that they represent, and the women religious themselves, because they aren't exactly the same, are they?
No, exactly. The Leadership Conference of Women Religious has about 1,100 members, and they are eligible to join the Leadership Conference if they're elected to some sort of leadership position in their orders. So mainly just some of the leaders of some of the women's orders. The sisters themselves, the other around 45,000, 50,000 sisters, do not actually belong to the Leadership Conference.
Right. Now, is it generally true that the theology represented by the LCWR and those who they have speak at their conferences is generally accepted by the folks that they represent?
I would say not, okay. And that's actually how I got into this whole business of writing about sisters. I know probably hundreds of sisters that comes from having been educated by sisters from kindergarten through college and then having taught in sister schools for a while, and then just doing some news articles back in the 90s for our Sunday Visitor on sisters. I started being contacted by them and saying, hey, can you write about the fact that the Leadership Conference is saying this or that, and most of us grassroots sisters don't agree with it? And so they've really been the motivation for me to do all the writing that I've done on sisters. Is I keep hearing from them that they do not agree with this. And in fact, that's how I kind of got into this new cosmology thing. I had an email from a sister back in 2009 telling me that her leadership in her order said that the sisters needed to learn the new cosmology because any order that doesn't is going to die. And she said, what do you know about this, and could you let me know? So I did some research and sent her some information I had, and that's when I first heard of this new cosmology.
So, Ann, this leads to the piece that you just wrote for the Register. It'll be coming out in the print edition, and folks will be able to find it online right now as we speak. Tell me a little bit about what you discovered from your assessment of the keynote address of the LCWR Assembly in 2013, which was given, of course, by Sister Elia Delio, on what they call the new cosmology.
Sure. Well, I actually attended the LCWR Assembly in 2012, at which the new cosmologist Barbara Marks Hubbard spoke. And quite frankly, I really couldn't understand a lot of what she was talking about. But she's a big proponent of the evolving consciousness, which means that we're all in a new phase of humanity, and we all have the capability of sort of taking over our own evolution and getting to a point, as she put it, that we used to think of having powers that only the gods used to have. It was sort of befuddling to me that she would be speaking to, you know, a group of Catholic women religious. I'm sure they all agreed with her hope, which is that we could all love each other more, have a more peaceful universe where instead of war we get along, we take good care of the earth that we depend on, and we love each other. That whole idea was wonderful, but the fact that we all have this sort of godlike quality in this where we can do our own evolving and get to be a different species, I thought was rather foreign. So I was interested in what would be said at the 2013 assembly, which was addressed by a Franciscan sister, Ilia Delio. And she spoke about the news cosmology also. But the thing that sort of struck me was when she spoke about God being in the cosmos in sort of a physical way, because she said there's no cosmos without God and no God without cosmos. I was really kind of struck by her saying that. And, you know, when we look at the catechism, we see that God is the creator of all. He does not depend on the cosmos. So we know that there is a God without the cosmos. He opted to create it. So it seemed like a very deceiving message to deliver to a group of women religious. But I find out since then that many of them are studying her works now. And recently the occasional papers from the leadership conference came out. They put occasional papers out twice a year. And this particular issue, the winter 2014 issue, is devoted to the new cosmology and evolutionary consciousness. So I think it is really permeating the leadership in women religious.
This is Dan Burke with Register Radio, and we're talking with Ann Carey, who's an expert on the history and the inner workings of women religious, particularly in the United States. And we're speaking about the theological shift in the Leadership Conference of Women Religious from what we understand to be faithful, historic Christianity, Catholicism, to a kind of a New Age worldview that really has completely lost its moorings and has completely drifted away from God and Christ and our theology as we understand it. Now, Anne, you mentioned the phrase, there's no cosmos without God and no God without cosmos. Now, of course, that came from Raymond Panikkar, who was originally an Opus Dei priest and then was asked to leave Opus Dei because of disobedience, which isn't a great way to start. But Raymond really himself ended up profoundly off the rails near the end of his writings and his writing and his activities with a complete confusion of what is the Trinity, who is God. And he did that with an immersion, a problematic immersion in ecumenicism. Do you see that same ecumenical spirit here, where a lot of these ideas come out of this desire for unity and union between peoples, but it obviously leads to a serious problem theologically?
Yes, I do agree with you. And in fact, Sister Ilia quoted Panikkar quite a bit during her talk, which I was able to obtain by buying the DVD of her talk through the Leadership Conference, in case anyone's wondering where I got that. But she did quote him, and I think there is this sense that all religions have this, the feeling is there's sort of this, they call it panentheism,
yeah,
that God is in the universe and the universe is in God, and because we all have this part of God within us, there's truth, you know, in all of the religions. Well, there's some truth certainly in many of them, but I wonder if they're beginning to lose sight of the fact that the fullness of truth lays in the Catholic Church.
Yeah, you're very charitable. I think it seems very clear that they're losing sight of that. A lot of this comes out of a false interpretation of Nostra Aetate, which, of course, you reference when we, as a Catholic Church, we do recognize the truths that other religions propose, as long as they're in keeping with, of course, the ultimate truth. But that document, even in and of itself, points us to the reality that in the Catholic Church we have the fullness of faith. And even Pope Benedict in 2010 criticized that document in the sense that he said all the tenet, of course, is true, but that there was a weakness in that it didn't properly set out to criticize the elements in other faiths that were damaging, untrue, in contrast with ours. And so thus you have this ecumenicism that is a bit unbridled in its outreach, and we have religious and people like Ilia Delio sitting at the feet of Buddha and others and learning from them as if that's the ultimate source of truth, rather than at the feet of Christ. So tell us about your conclusions in your article about the new cosmology, and what are the important points that we need to know about what's going on?
Well, one of the things I really would like to say is that I think there's a very insidious nature to this new cosmology, because they use a lot of specifically Christian and Catholic terms, and even do a lot of quoting of, say, Aquinas, Augustine. In fact, Sister Elizabeth Johnson in her book, The Quest for the Living God, she was the Doctrine Committee for the U.S. Bishops put out a paper with all of its objections to her work to warn people about it. And that was one of the specific things they said, was that she would quote Augustine or Thomas Aquinas as her source for making a claim, but she would quote them incorrectly or only partially. So I think this is something that people should be aware of. I think many of these sisters are probably very well motivated. They want to try to learn more about God, and if they think this is something new and interesting, they want to look into it. But I think there's a great deal of misinformation out there, and because some of it sounds good on the surface, you know, that we all want to move to more of a love of each other. We want to know more about God, but that doesn't mean that God is embedded, you know, in the universe, as this new cosmology tends to argue. So I think that people need to be a little more cautious instead of being so excited about, wow, this is the newest, latest, trendy thing coming along. It's really a lot of the new age, the old new age worn out stuff that goes back to the 1960s and 70s. And my conclusion is that the Catholic tradition, what we have learned over the centuries and centuries of Christianity and what the Church teaches is so much richer than the kinds of things that this new cosmology is coming up with, which is really old stuff.
I couldn't agree more, Anne, and I'm grateful. We're so grateful for your work on this topic. Thank you for being with us. I feel like we didn't have near enough time, but we'll definitely have you back on again to keep us up to date on what's happening with LCWR. God bless.
You're welcome. Thanks for having me.
Don't forget, you can listen to our show again by going to ncregister.com. Look for that picture of the microphone to listen to or download the show. Thanks for joining us this time on Register Radio. For our producer, Elena Rodriguez, Dan Berg, and all of us at the Register and here at EWTN, I'm Tom Price. See you next week.
For more information about the National Catholic Register and about Register Radio, go to ncregister.com. Podcasts of Register Radio are posted on ncregister.com and on ewtn.com. Join us next week at this time for Register Radio on the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.